From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Friday edition of The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
And I'm Travis Stein, WRAL's State House reporter.
And another stop and go week this week, but a few interesting things. We heard from Speaker Moore yesterday that he thinks that they could possibly have a budget proposal to take to the governor by the early part of next week. This seems to be much more optimistic than what I heard from Senator Berger this week. So I'm not sure exactly how likely that is, but they, you know, they say that they're making progress, and they say that the chairs have thrown up the big issues to the corner offices, which is usually the step that happens before they come up with a deal. It just depends on how long it takes them to sort out those things.
Yeah. And I reached out to the Senate folks earlier today, and they said, yeah, you know, more or less. So we're clearly coming to the end of that race. I think it's just a matter of where the tape actually is that everybody has to run through. And then, of course, you know, what's it going to look like when it gets to the governor? We're not going to see it unless a select few people, you know, leak it out. I think some appropriations chairs are going to see at least their parts of the budget, and the governor will see it, but it is going to be confidential so that they can have frank discussions. I don't know that between the speaker and Senator Berger and the governor, they've ever really had a problem having frank discussions.
I was going to say,
outside of a secret process. So, but that is, you know, that's their plan. And we'll see something when they either reach a deal or when they don't, I imagine.
In the meantime, though, some controversial bills not moving this week. A video lottery bill was scheduled for House Finance on Thursday morning. It got pulled from the calendar. The Emergency Powers Act got pulled from the calendar, floor calendar on the House Thursday because Representative Keith Kidwell, the sponsor, is still out with, his wife had COVID, so I'm not sure what their status is there.
The speaker said he expects Kidwell back next week, but I think was very similar to what he said last week. So may still be an evolving situation.
Exactly. And then we learned from Senator Berger on Tuesday that medical marijuana may or may not move this session. It may have to wait until spring. So we don't know too much about that. And you did there's a couple of really interesting bills that are moving, and you covered one of them. It was a bail bond reform.
Yeah, this is an industry request, and it does a number of things. One is it tells the courts to collect the names of charity bail bond groups that post bonds for people. And whenever those bonds are forfeited means exactly what you might think it does, i.e. the person doesn't show up for court and the money is forfeited into the system. And there's some concerns in the charity bail bonding industry that this is kind of a first step toward an industry pushback. You know, obviously, if you're a nonprofit, and you're just charitably doing people's bonds, whose business does that cut into? Well, the professional bail bond industry. I don't know how many of these groups there are, but there's one in Durham, and it's underwritten by Community Success Initiative, which is a name you might remember from one of our voting lawsuits, CSI, Community Success.
Right, that was the felon voting, right.
And but the bill would also change when a bond has to be forfeited, basically saving money for bail bond organizations if the judge doesn't issue an arrest warrant, for an example. And so some pushback on that from the ACLU and from some other advocates in that space. Bill has cleared, I think, two committees now in the Senate, and we'll see where it goes from there. I think it's in rules, but I'm not 100% on that. I can't quite remember the posture, but it seems to have momentum. You know, we got two types of bills at this time of year, right? Bills that have momentum to at least clear one house, at least clear one chamber, and bills that are just kind of getting that last gasp hearing, and then are going to go away forever.
Well, I'm on the fence about which of those this bill, a bill that I covered yesterday, is. And this was a bill that was in it was House Finance, and it was Representative Mark Brody's bill having to do with building inspections. So it would basically create sort of a parallel system of private certified commercial inspectors, commercial real estate only, that a builder could choose to use instead of having the local officials who normally inspect things for code come out and do those inspections. And so he kind of presented this as a way to help these overworked code enforcement departments especially in smaller towns. But basically, like, you know, the builder could choose the person they want to use. And the inspector would have zero liability. He would have full immunity for mistakes, for even negligence. I mean, anything but willful wrongdoing. You know, Brody's argument was that that's appropriate because the government inspectors also have liability because they have no liability because they work for the government.
Yeah.
But Representative Deb Butler pointed out that there's a lot of people who do governmental functions like trash haulers, road pavers, you know, that do not get full immunity from any liability for what they're doing. And she kind of thinks that that's probably just asking for trouble.
Yeah, you could see kind of, you know, when you get to pick your own person to come out, you can see where the trouble could come there. Of course, I'm sure there are developers all over the state frustrated I haven't looked at the numbers. I'm going to guess there are backlogs. There always seem to be.
Sure.
And things, you know, the economy is not exactly, we got some slipping cogs in the economy right now that are causing things to back up further. Whether or not this bill is an answer to that, time will tell.
It's hard to say. You know, it did get a hearing. It did not get a vote in House Finance, and there's no clear sense on when that bill is likely to reemerge.
Yeah.
But I understand that it's one that Representative Brody has been working on for a long time. So I'm not sure whether that's going to move forward or whether that's going to be on hold until the short session. Should we even have a break before the short session? Speaking of breaks, we're apparently also not going to have a break before redistricting.
Yeah, no, the time has run out on that.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're going to get going on redistricting probably the first week of October. And so, you know, they'll be trying to do both things simultaneously, I guess. But they're having their last meetings coming up next week. And the final one is in Fayetteville. I plan to be covering that one. And then after that, they'll be starting to call the committee meetings and starting to draw some maps.
Yeah. And I mean, will it go side by side of the budget negotiations? Will the budget negotiations be lightning quick? Probably more likely option A than option B, I would guess. But we'll kind of see how it plays out.
Well, it certainly does turn into a bargaining chip for certain members who want things, you know, and who also want good districts.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, presumably, if the Speaker of the House indeed wants to run for Congress, as, you know, many will say he does, that's on the table as well. It's because all these moving parts, which kind of make it interesting politically, but also very hard to keep your finger on the pulse.
Yeah, absolutely. Also this week, you did a story about state employees having to be quarantined without pay.
Yeah, and this is one of those things. I got a call a while back, or someone at the station did, from a woman who worked at NCCIW, the women's prison, and she got a check for the month of August. She was paid 26 cents, and wow. It was unclear what happened. And of course, you know, the state won't talk to you about someone's individual employment situation. Her supervisor had died of COVID. And so there was a possibility that her time card just didn't get put in, or there was some other problem with her time card. But it also listed a bunch of leave time that she had burned because she'd been quarantined. And so the question then became, all right, well, how common is this these paychecks that are at or close to zero because someone has been quarantined so often, either because they tested positive or a close contact had tested positive, and you just get sent home. It's like a 14-day quarantine. If you're not vaccinated at this point. And, you know, I don't think it'll surprise anyone to hear that we don't think that's enforced fully everywhere in every case, you know, particularly in the prison system where they have a 30% functional vacancy rate.
Sure. I mean, but, you know, the COVID bills that we saw basically gave them 80 extra leave hours to deal with this. But I mean, you can do the math. That's 10 days. That's not even enough to get through one full quarantine, pretty much.
Yeah,
So, you know, there's probably a lot of folks who have burned through that time.
That time. And then there's some other things that have, because I mean, remember, we've done bill after bill after bill. Nobody thought we'd be in this 18 months. So there previous in the pandemic, there were some other leave situations that were allowed as well. Plus, you got sick leave, vacation. But if you're a relatively new employee, you don't have a lot of leave built up. So the bottom line question was, how many people are getting zero or close to it paychecks? I have no idea. Can't be that many because I think we'd hear about it. Scenic says it hasn't heard a lot of complaints like that, the State Employees Association. But the state was able to tell me, wasn't able to answer that question, but it was able to tell me, Office of State Human Resources, how many people have burned through the 80 hours, just that 80 hours of COVID leave, or are close to it. The answer is 1,600 people have burned through all of it. another 500 are real close.
Not too many.
Now it is out of like 59,000 employees. So not a ton, but it did take me 3 weeks to get that answer. And the head of human resources wouldn't do an interview about it. I don't know. When y'all are cagey, I don't know what to think. When the answer, when the question is basically, hey, y'all, is this a problem? And the answer is, well, we're not going to really talk about it.
I'm going to assume that's a yeah.
It sounds like a yes, but I think the answer is probably not. I don't know. I just don't know what to do when people are cagey. But the story is on NC Capital. You can read what I do know.
And now today we saw a new billboard on the outskirts of Raleigh. This is a billboard that was put up by the John Locke Foundation, I understand, encouraging teachers to leave NCAE to get a $500 raise, which would essentially be not paying the dues.
Yeah, but stop paying your dues. And
but this is a pretty open sort of political move for a 501c3.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with anything like it. I've got a call into John Locke. I'm gonna write a little something about this today. You know, it's nothing new for John Locke or another entity on the right to criticize the NCAE, right? I mean, that is, it may not be a political organization, but it supports Democrats. I think we could say beyond primarily supports Democrats, it almost exclusively supports Democrats. Although they have had some words for Governor Cooper over the last, 6 months or so.
Yeah.
But to get a billboard, that's a little different than writing an op-ed. Have you ever seen John Locke or an organization like that take a step like this?
No, not. I mean, the closest I can think of is back when McCrory was running and he had like the something for Alliance for Better Carolina or something was doing things like that. But that wasn't the Locke Foundation or Civitas or anything like that. Yeah, so it's interesting.
Someone has decided to escalate the fight with NCAE. In the past, the General Assembly did they try or succeed to get rid of the automatic dues paying? That's a bill several years old.
They tried, and then they had it overturned in court, I believe.
That sounds right. And then also they require NCAE to report the number of members it has to the state auditor, which the NCAE, I think every year has refused to do so. Look, Republicans and the right fighting with teachers and the left, that's nothing new, but the billboards, that seems to be an escalation.
Yeah. What else was on your list?
The energy bill. So
that's right. Which we've been waiting to see.
Big thing. It's kind of gone quiet. Duke Energy's bill that would kind of change the way we regulate energy in the state and also kind of lay out how quickly we close coal-fired plants and what we replace them with, how much of it is solar, how much of it is natural gas. Passed the House, and now the Senate is essentially negotiating that with the Cooper administration, with the governor's office. I have heard, and I've heard this from a few people, but I can't give you names, so you can take it with the grain of salt that you want to around the General Assembly. Tuesday or bust, though. Like, we're going to get a deal, or we're going to put this off till next session. I had previously heard that negotiations were going really well between the Senate and the governor's office, so I don't know that you want to read too much into that. I would think we would get a bill, but it'll remain alive for next year, right? It's already passed the House. There's also some controversy on the solar section. The solar folks really liked the solar section of this bill, but I understand that's morphing in a way that they may not like so much. I don't want to get too far into it without actually reading a bill. I also don't know, whether natural gas. Senator Paul Newton was real clear when the bill was in committee on the Senate side, when he was asking questions that, we want natural gas to be a big part of the state's energy future. And that may not have been when the bill was in committee, but during some of the confirmation hearings.
Sure, that's right.
For the DEQ's new secretary.
Right.
So you would think that would mean the Senate would want to see natural gas play a significant role going forward. So I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully news next week on that. And what else have I got? Oh, I wanted to double back on something. I said last week that Senator Ben Clark and Representative Verla Insko were kind of the first people to announce their retirements from the legislature for this next cycle. I don't think that's quite right. Representative Charles Graham down in Robeson County, has indicated that he's going to run for Congress. You're not going to do both. Senator Wiley Nichols indicated he wants to run for a new congressional seat that hasn't been drawn yet. That's kind of a lesser promise, and we'll see what happens there. But other people have been making moves. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, and I should mention a bill that has reemerged. This is the Employee Transparency Bill. So this is one that the Senate kind of really fought over for a long time, trying to make more parts of state employees' personnel records public record, including like the reasons that people were demoted or fired, to the extent that it doesn't violate their, you know, their privacy rights, putting those in public record. Well, the Senate passed that a while ago, and it's just been kind of sitting in the House. So just on Thursday, the Senate was working on a bill that had to do with actually remote notarization, and decided to stick this whole thing, that whole employee transparency bill, right back into that new bill and send that over to the House. So so basically that's what we've heard is that the House doesn't want those two bills combined, but that the House is committed to trying to do something with the Senate on this bill. Scenic has been the loudest, opponent of this bill has been saying that, you know, somebody could put something in there that's not true and it could really damage a person's reputation. I don't know. I get the impression that there is the political will to get this done. I just don't know that it's going to happen this fall.
Yeah. Or how big of a, you know, it's always a risk reward. Is the juice worth the squeeze on this? And
right.
I will say, you know, when I was a reporter in Georgia, a local government reporter, I went through employee files all the time. I am not familiar with any time where that backfired on an employee and they had been accused of something they didn't do. And that they got lots of undue attention. I'm not saying it won't happen. But I'm saying other states allow reporters and others to go through, you know, most of an employee's personnel file, public employees, without great incident.
Another bill we've been watching for a long time reemerge, and that is the No Patient Left Behind bill. So when we last saw that bill, it was largely what it said was hospitals, nursing homes, other places have to allow visitation within CDC guidelines, and they can't be forced to do things that could lose them their Medicare or Medicaid payments, right? Because if you violate federal rules, that's what happens. And that was a lot of concern. It was really carefully worked out. Well, it went to conference committee, and when it has come back out, it's gotten a lot wider. So it now covers basically compassionate care visits for a whole list of reasons, including end of life, if the patient is grieving the loss of someone else, if the patient is not eating or drinking or having difficulty in adjusting to a placement in a facility, would allow compassionate care visits in all these cases, as long as they, you know, follow the protocols under the, you know, the nursing home or the hospital. Now, I'm not, you know, it certainly seems a lot wider to me, but it passed the House with a bipartisan vote. It's got one more vote in the Senate. I'm assuming it'll pass then. Interested to see what DHHS thinks about all this.
Yeah, and I'm guessing there's some rulemaking process for DHHS on the back end after passage, but I have not read the latest version of that bill to be sure. The High School Athletics Association bill.
That's right.
That one's also going to kind of getting toward the end finish line. You know more about that one than I do, I think.
I don't think we know very much about it at all at this point. What we know is that a deal has been reached. We don't know what the deal looks like. We don't know. All we know is that the NCHSAA doesn't think it's a very good deal. They say, you know, there's still a lot of hurdles to cross, but apparently Governor Cooper has also confirmed what Republicans in the Senate and the House said this week, which is that they have come to some sort of working framework for this bill. And so now they're trying to work through the details, and they're hoping to have one coming out soon.
All right. I just have a couple quick schedule things. No votes in the Senate next week. We may have already mentioned that. One day of voting in the House. That's going to be Wednesday, 10 a.m. The voter ID lawsuit, or I should say one of the voter ID lawsuits, the one that kind of re-upped the injunction against requiring ID at the polls. We were already under an injunction. It's been extended by a 3-judge panel. Republicans are appealing that, but the appeal has not yet been filed as of yesterday. Wouldn't be surprised if that came through today. We're recording this Friday about 1 p.m. And I mean, you'll be familiar with the arguments because they've been the same basic arguments one side or the other for the last near decade. But that, if you like turns of the screw, I believe a screw will turn soon.
All right. Well, that's about all I have to add for this week.
Yeah, I think that's enough. We did 2 wraps this week, Laura. Not bad for us.
Not bad. All right. Well, you know, we're going to try to do one on Wednesday too, since that's going to be the main day of action over in the House or, you know, in that building, period. So thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you up then here on The Wrap.
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.